This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Lloyd Worthy. Good morning, Lloyd.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, and it's good to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you.
So the way we do the show is we start with the question where you can frame who you are, mm-hmm. how you want people to start to know you.
Okay.
And that's why, so I ask who are you? And stories, labels, qualities, whatever.
Got it.
Makes sense.
All right. Well, my name's Lloyd Worthy. I'm a St. Louisan. I moved to Ithaca about a year and a half ago. I would say Lloyd Worthy would be the person that wants to grow. And he would find places to go where he can be able to grow. I've been on many journeys, and I've arrived in Ithaca, and I'm thinking this is a journey where it stops. We don't know, you know, the future, of course, mm-hmm. but I've been going through a lot of things in my life where I don't know where to go this way or that way, and I just closed my eyes and just went with it, and mm-hmm. it's been going great.
Okay. So we're gonna come back to that notion of journey and kind of what brought you here. But you came with some music today.
Got it.
And the first one is TaylorMade, My Life is a Whirlwind. My Life is Like a Whirlwind.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say something before we play that? Or
basically,
after?
That song is a rap group that is from St. Louis,
uh-huh.
Missouri.
Yeah.
And they express how they feel about living in St. Louis. Living in St. Louis is a totally different lifestyle than Ithaca.
Uh-huh.
And St. Louis is what made me the person that I am today.
Right.
So we wouldn't even be talking.
Right.
You know what I mean?
If you didn't
without
start.
These songs. You
yeah,
know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, no, I get it.
So that song symbolizes where I come from and what happens in St. Louis, and whether you mm-hmm. want to see it or not, you see it.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a question that may make more sense to mm-hmm. to people who know St. Louis. Are you from St. Louis City or St. Louis County?
I'm from St. Louis City.
Okay.
Northside St. Louis.
Yeah.
So county is totally different than St. Louis City.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that county is probably 5 or 6 miles away from St. Louis City.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
But the heart of the city, I'm in,
right,
in the city.
Right, you're from the heart of the city.
Yes.
Yeah. So here we go. My life is like a whirlwind.
Turn it up a little bit, my ear. Twisted in them shoes and in them sheets.
You're listening to the Made of Clay Report on WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest on this hour is Lloyd Worthy. Lloyd, you said that you were from the city of St. Louis.
Yes.
And that you've been on a journey.
You got it.
And where has that journey taken you? And you know, because where did you go when you left St. Louis?
Got it.
And eventually, I want you to work around to what brought you to Ithaca.
Gotcha. All right. Well, during this journey, it's opened up a lot of different opportunities. As you know, St. Louis is a bigger city.
Yeah.
But just because it's a bigger city does not mean opportunity.
Right.
When I say opportunity, I mean something that shows that you stand out. When you have an opportunity for something, usually someone sees something in you or someone sees something that you can be able to help with. When I moved to Ithaca, people know that I am not from Ithaca.
Right.
So I would say I would have something to offer more than the average Ithacan, you know, mm-hmm. the average Ithacan. So,
and there are a lot of people who aren't from Ithaca,
exactly.
too. But in your demographic, you've migrated here in your mid-20s.
Got it.
And you're not going to college in one of the colleges. Mm-mm. So you're...
Yeah. So I mean, it's one of those things where you pray about it. You know what I mean? I've left my family, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm the only one I know in Ithaca when I moved here,
right?
Besides my lady, but it was a hard decision to make, but it was the best decision for me right now.
Did you accompany her on a move, or was
no?
My lady
is from Ithaca.
Okay.
So I decided to move to Ithaca. Yes.
Okay. And how did you meet?
It's crazy. We met on Facebook. Yeah, we met on Facebook. And it sounds weird. Sounds very weird. Who would have thought, you know what I mean?
And you were in St. Louis?
And I was in St. Louis at the time, and I decided to see her, and I flew out here. We met a couple of times. I flew back, and I said, I got to go back out to Ithaca. So I flew out again, and we had a great time. And on my drive home, I realized, like, I don't want to go back home because I want this to be my home.
Wow.
And, you know, I went back home, and I told my family, I said, I got to go.
Yeah.
You know, St. Louis is great, but... there are more opportunities for me out there, and maybe it'll make me a better man, because there's a lot that goes on in St. Louis. I love my city, though. I love the city I'm from.
It's also a rough city.
You got it.
And
whether you are doing good or bad, you're going to get rough part.
I know. I have a sibling who's lived outside of the city, you know, the race issue is huge.
It's very huge. Yeah, you know, very huge. And what's crazy is... the population of white, black, whatever you want to call it, it's not even race. I mean, like, depending on race, what you go through, because it's all different types of races that, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. And it's also poverty.
Yeah,
you got it. Which is probably, my sense, in a place like St. Louis, that grinds you worse.
You got it.
In some instances than the race.
But it also gives you a perception of the person that you are, like, you can be able to... become who you want to be. When you leave a state, you know, leave a city, people notice that. You know what I mean? People really notice that you are someone different. You know what I mean? And those struggles and those things that I went through evolved me to be the person I am today.
Right. So I want to get back to the struggles, but first, what is the quality? What made you want to leave St. What about this lady?
Got it.
That made you want to uproot yourself? What did it strike you so thoroughly?
She is one of a kind. The reason why I said she's one of a kind, because I have never met someone that was so heartfelt. You know what I mean? That cared for others so much that it was unique to me. Uh-huh. So when I seen this and I said, this woman really...
And you saw it was true.
It was true, yeah. And actually, it's not over the phone. It's not... Yeah. Here, there, you know what I mean? Not today, it's always. So, you know what I said? I don't want to let this one go. I don't want to let this one pass me up. So I decided to make a change in my life. And I said, you know what? Whether you nervous about it, you know, because it's a real big life decision. You leaving all your family to go somewhere to be with a woman 900 miles away.
That you don't know real well. But
I have faith in it. Yeah. That's what got me here, so...
And you can't not try it out if that is where your heart is, where your treasure.
You got it. You got it. So I stayed in the church every day praying about it before I moved up here for 3 months. It was real big. But we're doing good, you know, and I've been doing good. She's been doing good. And there's nothing but advancement, you know, ever since we've been together. So that's how it's supposed to be, you know.
So, you know, it seems like right now you're in the middle of an event that is going to be a life-defining event.
Yeah.
And when you're in the middle of something, it's almost too soon to talk about what it means. So I want to look back. To look back at your life.
Yeah.
And what were, you know, what was the, if there was a major defining experience or a few of them, you know, what do we need to know that you've been through and what you've learned from it?
What have you been through? I didn't grow up with two parents and, you know, the situation that I've dealt with, it was my childhood. That was the worst part, I would probably say, because my parents, they were married for 15 years and decided to get divorced. I was born and raised in St. Louis until I was 4 years old. Mm-hmm. And my grandparents, which was on my mother's side, decided that we should move to Chicago with them. Mm-hmm. So my father said, okay, we're going to make a living in Chicago. We're going to go to Chicago where your parents are, you know. And so I moved to Chicago when I was 4 years old, three or four.
But your family was intact at that point.
It was intact, yes.
Yeah.
And we stayed there, and I guess they had their differences. I was about 10 years old,
mm-hmm.
9, 10 years old. And my father said that I'm taking my son.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
and even if you had pieces of information, it still wouldn't matter. Make sense.
Yeah, it didn't. Yeah. None of it made sense. At first, I thought it was my fault.
Yeah.
You know, me not doing something, cleaning the room. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, still small stuff, but too. You know, when you're that age, you don't know really what was the cause of that situation.
Right.
So,
and a person tends to blame themselves when they feel hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, so my father is the type of man that he wanted me to be a man, and he wanted to show me how to be a man,
uh-huh.
and my mother could not provide that for me, because you have a father, you have a mother. Your father is supposed to teach you how to be a man.
Right.
And my mother knew that was the best decision for me, because living in Chicago with her raising me and my sister, it was going to be very hard for her.
So your sister stayed with your mom?
My sister stayed with my mom.
And you went with your dad.
I went with my dad. But I could tell that she did not want me to go, but she knew that was the best decision for me. My father, I think he knew exactly what he was doing, because he knew my grandmother was there and he knew my aunt was there. And that was going to be the role models in my life as a mother.
Uh-huh. His mother and his sister.
Exactly.
Were there. Yeah.
So
in St.
I think
Louis.
He, yeah,
and
in St.
Your,
Louis.
And your mom had her family there
exactly.
for your sister.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, my sister basically is not my father's child, but that is the child, that is the father that raised her.
Right.
So she's always called him that. And I kind of see the separation that happened.
She's an older sister?
She's an older sister. She's 5 years older than me.
Okay.
So, you know, it was like, okay, well, this is my kid, and I know it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I know that's your son. You know, he wanted to make sure that I was taken care of.
Right. Right. And I want to flag something here,
yes.
because this is not this story, which is typical among Black fathers who have active roles in their kids' lives. They are more active,
yes.
than white fathers on average.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there has been some research reported about the level of involvement of Black fathers who are involved in their children's lives. The involvement is incredible, and oftentimes against incredible odds, which would be doing something like wanting to be the primary parent and take you to St. Louis from Chicago.
Yeah,
and that is a story that we have not heard enough publicly, and
you're
telling it. So what about your dad? What worked in your relationship with your dad? What was not so good? What did you learn from him?
Well, so this is my father. He's a wonderful man, but he is the type of man that is very strict, mm-hmm. straightforward. I'm here to provide for you, go to school, put clothes on your back, mm-hmm. food on the table. All the lovey-dovey, No.
That's not his role.
That is not his role. He is not that type of man.
Yeah.
And it was hard for me because guess what? I just moved 300 miles away from my mom, which was that type of woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
That nurturer that I didn't get. So me going to my grandmother and aunt was the only place I would get that from. You know, I'm young. I'm a kid. You know what I mean?
You're 10, right?
I'm 10 years old, you know, but my father was never that type of father. But I didn't have to worry about it because my mom was there. Right. You know what I mean? So, you know, living with my father, of course, we weren't living with my grandmother and aunt. But, you know, at that time, you know, my father, he was there for, he made sure he was a provider. He made sure that I was at home when I needed to be, sleep when I needed to be to get ready to go to school.
Right.
That's the type of man he was.
He provided a structure.
Thank you.
That you could rely on.
That was it. You know, and that's kind of tore me up because, you know, you want to do things with your father, but he was a worker, a hard worker.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he had to, you know, provide for both of us and he had other things on his plate as well. So I could understand it. But at the same time, you're a kid and you don't want to understand it.
Yeah. You want your own father.
Yeah. I want my father, you know, and I had to grow up in it. And it's weird because at about age 17 or 18 is when I realized that's not that type of man. He's not that type of nerd. He doesn't do that. He's not the one to, you know, it's real weird because my father told me he loved me about 2 months ago for the first time I've heard in many, many years.
Wow.
Many, many years.
What prompted that?
I think him not seeing me.
Yeah.
Because I come from a place where we don't say we love you, but we will show it with everything that we do.
Yep.
And all my family's like that. It's weird, you know, and that's maybe some reasons why, you know, I have an issue with my lady right now. She wants to hear it, but I do everything to show her that I love her. And she knows it, but she just wants to hear it sometimes. Right.
And it's a style thing. And it's and you can if we don't get dug in, either one of us get dug in on having to have it in a particular way or having to give it in a particular way, then we can move a little bit. And be graceful with each other.
Yeah.
It sounds like, though, in terms of, or the sense that I get, is that you, in a profound sense, you forgave your father.
I did.
When you were 17.
I did. I had to accept that is the person that I'm talking to. I had to accept who he was. And at first I thought it was just, you know, at first he thought I had animosity toward him because, you know, of course, we kind of grew
bitter.
We grew up disagreements a lot you know what I mean?
And you're a teenager.
Come on, you know? You know, it was just one of those types of things. And I felt like I knew a whole lot. He talks a whole lot. I talk a whole lot. We fight. We argue. And it just didn't work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I was 18, I moved out.
Uh-huh.
17, 18, I moved out. Mm-hmm. And
you moved out before you finished high school?
It was after. Mm-hmm. The fact. So it was 18. Yeah. Well, I was 17 because
you were young. Okay,
But moved out.
So you moved out because you didn't want to be under his thumb?
Well, it was like this. Basically, I did something at my job. I was set. He taught me. That's one thing he taught me.
Yeah.
You want something, go get it.
Yeah.
You know, work for it. Mm-hmm. Save your money for it.
Right.
And I did that. So I was 16 years old with a job.
Uh-huh.
And I worked. I went to school and went to a job after school. Yeah. Worked for DSW Shoe Warehouse. And I was smelling feet all day, but I
and probably the youngest salesman there.
I was working it.
Yeah.
But I did that for about 2 years, and he said, "Okay, this is what I'm gonna teach you. You contribute to the household. I'm not asking you for much, but I felt that it was a whole lot because you know I'm only getting 140-150 bucks off a check. You want 50 every week?
Yeah,
that's a lot.
you know
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But he was just trying to teach me some type of responsibility. And that was what it was, contributing to the household. And
I worked the same way when I was in junior high and high school. I wasn't asked for it, but it was clear that it was needed. So
So you know, I got to the point to where I did something at the job. I did my work, but I think boss man came in the next morning, got mad, not at me but everyone, and he seen me on the tape sitting down. because I was done with my rose being clean, but a little girl, you know, that thought she was pretty and she didn't have to do, you know, clean up her shoes and all the stuff. And her role she had selected because she was new.
Right.
That she thought everybody was going to do it for her.
Yeah, she hadn't learned.
I didn't do anything. So I sat down. He called me sitting down, and he said, I got to let you go. So father said, we lose our jobs, but we still got to pay rent.
Yeah.
I still want that $50. I said, I can't give you this $50. This is my last.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, cut me some slack.
Yeah.
He said, you don't get cut slack in the real world.
Right.
He said, if you don't give me the $50, you got to leave. I left. Mm-hmm. So that was the boom.
Where did you go?
I had a girlfriend. Uh-huh. My ex I moved with, and I stayed with her for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it was.
And you got a job.
I got a job.
How soon?
Sooner than 3 months, 4 months. I worked for UPS. Mm-hmm. You know, I was on load or something small, but it was something that was all right. Yeah. And did all different types of jobs. I started learning how to do different things. I was cutting grass on people's lawns. I was trying to find all kinds of ways to make money. Mm-hmm. And I was doing it. I was making money because I'm not the one that is afraid to learn something.
Right.
So, I found ways, and we did all right, and then we just grew disagreements, and that was a rough relationship. You know, first time living with a woman.
Yes.
That was very rough, especially at 18, 19 years old.
Yeah, you're barely a young man.
You know what I mean? And I learned that early, and that was 3 years of my life, you know what I mean? I can't say that it was horrible because it taught me things that I know now, mm-hmm. but yeah.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, sorry.
Now, I want to pick up on your story and then your journey, but let's take a break for some music.
Got it.
And you brought a song called The Floaters.
Yes.
Is this a good time to cut to that song?
That is an old school song my father played.
Okay, so here we go. Do you want to say anything before it or after it?
You know what? You can go ahead and play it. Yeah.
Okay.
And my name is Riley. Now I like a woman who loves her freedom. And I like a woman who can hold her own. And if you fit that description, baby, come with me. Take my hand. Charles. Now I like a woman that's quiet. A woman who carries herself like Miss Universe.
So flow with me, baby. Flow on. Lisa, and my name is Larry. And I like a woman that loves everything and everybody. And you know what, ladies? If you feel that this is you, then this is what I want you to do.
Floaters and Float On, and you're listening to WRFI Watkins Glen Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca, 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Lloyd Worthy. So Lloyd, what about the Floaters and Float On? Why is that song special to you?
All right, so my father used to play that song, and you know, me being young, you know, I knew I was a Cancer. You know, at the time, that was a horoscope sign, and right. The guy on the song said he's Cancer. His name's Larry, and I said, I'm a Cancer. My name's Lloyd. So that kind of stuck with me. You know what I mean? It stuck, and it became one of my favorite songs. Yeah. Uh-huh. It became one of my favorite ones.
Right, and the line about the Cancer person is your line too.
You got it. So it was one of those types of songs where you just cannot get that out your head. It sticks.
It's very mellow.
Yeah.
It's a nice piece. Okay, so I want to go back to your story. So you worked for UPS. So between the ages of 21 and 25, what were you up to?
All right. Basically, the relationship kind of went sour at 21.
Yeah, it's bound. I mean,
decided to move in with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. All right. Grandmother, she said, all right, you can stay here with me, but you got to get a job.
Right. Yeah.
So,
so this was when you broke that relationship ended when you didn't have work, or
it went sour because I didn't have work anymore.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Kind of like my father. It's weird. Uh-huh. But you know what? I've always still provided, and I tried my best. And she knew that. But, you know, we had some things going on with the whole, you know, you messing with this person or whatever. Just a little small stuff you know.
Some jealousy.
To leave because I felt I was being betrayed and stuff like that. And she wanted me to stay there, and I said, nah. And you know what the crazy part is? That me being there in that house, I never advanced, never went anywhere. I'm talking about never.
Yeah. So for 3 years, you were kind of on hold.
Yes.
So what happened? What once you got out, what did you do?
Well, I got out, went to my grandmother's house. She allowed me to stay there. And she said,
as long as you got a job.
As long as I got a job. You know what I mean? She was the one, the type that she wants to make sure that I'm able to provide for myself. She was not worried about, my grandmother was never worried about me providing for that house.
Right.
She would want me to, but she wanted to make sure I'm taking care of myself.
Right. Yeah. You got to work for yourself as much as for anybody
else.
That's
what the type of woman she was. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, it took me a long time to learn that, but that's what she wants. She wanted me to have something for myself, not for, it's not, you know, easy dollar for her. She doesn't see it that way because I don't have to let you live here.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what she did. She allowed me to be able to get something for myself. So I had a friend that basically, you know, worked for some type of service company where you can go to different jobs and give you. And I got selected to go for a certain job. It was only supposed to last 3 weeks. And I said, you know what? I'm sitting in the job. I work for a telecommunications company. And I said, I'm here 3 weeks, but I'm going to make this last a long time. Mm-hmm. They don't know it yet. You know, it was a temp service job.
Right. Yeah.
So they didn't know it yet, but I'm saying this is going to last more than 3 weeks. I'm going to show them that I need to work here.
Right.
And I need a job. You. Yeah, they need me. So, I worked there 3 weeks, And I talked to the manager. I said, so what's about what's with permanent? You know what I mean? Uh-huh, like, uh-huh. Is it a way, you know, a way I can get on? And she said, well, it's a conflict of interest because you work for a temp service agency and you know, we can't hire you. We will have to buy you. And I said, well, they don't have to know anything. Mm-hmm. I can leave that temp service right now. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. And I got on. I worked there for 4 years. Mm-hmm.
And that's the job you left from to come
that's
out here.
That's the job I left to come out here.
Yeah, yeah. And what you also, I mean, you seem to have learned your father's lesson and your grandmother's lesson that you take pride in your work.
You got
And I imagine that when you haven't, I mean, when I haven't had work that I've wanted, it's taken a toll on me personally.
On you personally. Yeah. You know, I think my lady's starting to understand that when funds become low in my mind, mm-hmm. that, you know, I get kind of depressed, I guess you would say.
Right.
You
get low.
Yeah, I get low. You know what I mean? Because it's something that you're not used to having. That's something that I want to build for myself. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, when that happens, you know, you do get a little low. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was grown up to know that this is what you want. When you want that, you get it. And usually no help was involved in that. So.
And it takes time. It takes months, years, decades sometimes to achieve
Your goals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. And I did pretty good 4 years though.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So do you want to describe what that work was and why it was meaningful for you?
All right. Well, of course, you know, I talk.
Yeah.
It was a telecommunications company where we talked to people on the phone, where we had studies. Basically the type of job this was is, for instance, you got something like a new juice product coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Before that juice product comes out, the client who owns that product wants to get it tasted first.
Right.
To get opinions and views whether this product needs to even be on the market, on the shelf.
Whether there's going to be any demand or not.
Exactly. Right. So my job was to recruit people over the phone to see if they qualify to come in for a study to taste the product, to give their opinion on it. And then they actually got paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did for a half a year. Well, I would say a year at the job. And I've done it so well that... boss lady, she said, well, what do you want? You want to, you know, do something a little different? I said, yeah, you know, and she got me in the programming part with Data Excel.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved up. I became supervisor. I got bumped up and then I started doing data entry, which is basically the screeners and the screens that the people use on the phone after mm-hmm. they get done with qualifying somebody. I have to put it in the system. So I did that for the remaining 3 years of that, and then I started doing more things. Mm-hmm. I started grabbing on to more things, and I started doing on-hand projects with the actual client, mm-hmm. helping them out with studyings, and it became a real nice job. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I was good with people. You know, I supervised 70, 80 people that had any questions on the phone, with their computer, with their phones, with the respondent.
Right.
And I did the job pretty well, and I was a very good person to communicate with. I was easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So that job became real good for me.
Yeah, that's really neat. That's really neat. The quality that stands out mm-hmm. to me most is the amount of the quality of your optimism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did you come around to that human quality of being as optimistic as you seem to be?
Well, I have to thank my family for that. My father's like that. My grandmother's like that.
So he's a stickler for detail.
You got it.
But he's optimistic.
You got it.
That's a good combination.
When it became the father role, it was like, this is what it is.
Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what yeah. I mean? But very easy to work with people. You uh-huh. know, he's a very good guy to work with. And he's shown that in all his jobs he's had. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And he, you know, basically that and my aunt and my grandmother. My grandmother is one of the nicest women you will ever meet. She showed me a lot, and she's straightforward too. Mm-hmm. She's very straightforward.
Right. So how does someone like your grandmother, who's straightforward, mm-hmm. show you model optimism for you?
Well, I mean, it was certain things that she said. Okay, this is what you need to learn. This is in this situation. This is what you need to do, because if you don't do it this way, you're going to come up with this outcome. And I, you know, at age 19, 18, you know, you thinking that you the first one who's done it, and my grandmother don't know what she's talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know what? It's just in our blood. You know what I mean? We are those type of people that are just happy and friendly. You know right. what I mean? And I think that's something that just carried on. It just moved on to me.
So she's realistic.
She's very realistic.
Straightforward. And wants to help open doors for you.
Which means
she's coaching you.
You got it. That my grandmother is one woman that I'm telling you right now, I thank her all the time because she's done a lot for me.
But that quality of coaching is something that we all need.
Yeah.
And then kind of the next step is for people who can kind of sponsor you.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with the supervisor helped to promote you and kind of keep pushing you because she became your sponsor.
You got it.
Yeah. And that's really neat. Neat stuff.
Yeah. That job, you know, I dealt with stuff at the job. You know, I had people very upset that, you know, those supervisors and those bosses seeing that in me.
And you would have been, I imagine you would have been pretty young. You'd be supervising people considerably older than yourself.
Yes. Age 18 all the way. We had respondents. I'm sorry, not respondents, but we had recruiters on the floor. That were all the way from 18 to probably 65, 70 years old.
Yeah, and you're a 22-year-old.
Yeah, I worked the good thing about it, I worked with all of them.
Yeah.
I knew how to treat a woman that was 65 years old. You treat them with respect just like you would treat the 18-year-old. But for a 65-year-old, 70-year-old might have a different issue than an 18-year-old. That 65-year-old probably can't hear that well.
Yeah.
She needs her phone turned up. You know what I mean?
Or
stuff.
Or whatever.
So I can't reach this on the floor. Could you grab that for me?
Yeah.
So things of that nature. You know, I was very willing to help, and I try to make it the best experience for them, and that makes my day go by if everybody's happy.
Yep.
So you know, I was just that type of goofy, you know, excited person to you know to work with. So
so you introduced an idea here to. Being a little goofy or a little fun loving outside the box.
Yeah,
that's me. That's helpful.
That's me. Yeah. That's me. With the job I'm at now, same thing. Uh-huh. You know, a lot of people didn't know my personality, I guess, in the beginning when I moved to Ithaca, but they do now. That's just the type of person I am. I work, and everybody can see that. That's just who I am.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And what impressed me when I met you was just your willingness to engage me in both light conversation and something very specific, on target, all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, powerful. it's just, you know what, it's just, you know, you got some people don't have that quality. They don't have that, and I think God gave me that ability to talk to people, to be able to talk.
Right. You know? And I associate it with in part with Midwest, even regardless of racial background, because we were raised to visit.
Got it.
And I imagine that you were raised to visit too. And I imagine on Sunday you might go around and do some visiting.
Yep.
And
eat at four different places.
And that teaches you how to be a conversationalist.
You got it. I have a big family. I mean, a huge family. I've never went to a family reunion and met someone that I met someone new that is my family.
Yeah.
That's a cousin. You know, it's crazy. I mean, it'll be 50 or 60 of us out there. Sometimes it'd be more than that. And we got a big family, so we always conjugate.
So do you want to go to this next song? It was Snooty Wild Made Me.
Yep, that's me. Okay. That's what I feel. You know, that song basically brings out he describes how where he comes down from nowhere and he advances somewhere. Whether it be whatever he feels that is his accomplishment, you know, I pertain that to the way I feel. And I feel that me coming from St. Louis, living in New York, that's what made me.
Right.
That's why I got that song.
Okay, here you go.
Lord, it's K-Count, man. Shout out, had to do it, DJs. KG Classic, the DJ.
KG Classic.
Look.
Late night, get me creeping with your demo lit. Service swerving on the highway and I'm doing about it. I can see no haters talking, but they do not fit. So I done got it out the mud, that's that made. I done got it out the mud, that's that made.
that that made me. I done got it out the mud.
That shit, it made me. I done ate up out that mud and it taste like gravy. All I try to do is flip the four into a baby. All I wanna do is flip the four to feed my baby. See, I know these watching any hate me. Cause I came from nothing, now this kid done made it. See me pulling in the projects and annihilator. See, yo, I can't do y'all either like annihilator. Chopper, 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 dead and make them percolator. Brim chopping down the block just like an alligator. All this shit turn my IRA like I'm Terminator. Holla at Amigo Cali, plug a elevator.
Big night, kept me creeping with your demo lit. Service swerving on the highway and I'm doing about it. I can see no haters talking, but it do not fit. Cause I done got it out the mud. That's that that made me. That's that that made me. That's that that made me. I done got it out the mud. That's that that made me. That's that that made me. That's that that made me. I done got it out the mud. That's that that made me.
Off Fifth and North, yeah, affiliated. Orchestrated with my mob and it's so amazing. 150-20, all I see is paper. Smoking on Jamaica, you get wrong, you meet Jamaica. Popping bottles, shout out to my haters. You my motivator, that's why we be motivated. Holly squad up, all black like them Raiders. Running in your shop, we ain't gon' quit until we take it. Only if you know, bro, no joke. Coming from the ghetto, not no more. Always on go mode, tic tac toe, lining up.
Kept me creeping with your demo lit. Service swerving on the highway and I'm doing about it. I can see no haters talking, but it do not fit. Cause I done got it out the mud. That's that that made me. That's that that made me. That's that that made me. I done got it out the mud. That's that that made me. That's that that made me. That's that that made me. I done got it out the mud. That's that that made me.
That was Snooty Wild and Made Me, and our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Lloyd Worthy. Lloyd, you have been able to do quite a lot.
Yes.
With and in terms of the relationships that have been behind you and your drive to both work and to be useful to yourself and others. What are the things you aspire for? What's in the works now? What are you thinking about?
Well, right now, I've been doing several things in Ithaca. I've been doing more things in Ithaca than I've been doing in St. Louis. I work for a school district. I'm mm-hmm. a teacher's aide.
Uh-huh.
I worked one to one with a student right now who's doing real good. I enjoy kids. That's right. One thing I do. No, I enjoy kids, and I've built up hobbies as far as cutting hair. I cut hair now, you know, just for fun. You know what I mean? And I do pretty well at it. If I keep going at it, I probably would do something with, barbering. But right now, it's just a hobby. It's just something I enjoy doing. And I also work, you know, at the liquor store. And that right there alone has built so much for me that, you know, a lot of people don't know. It's a lot of stuff to talk about with wine.
I
did not know that. You know
what
I mean?
Right.
And I was like, what is wine? You know, when I first, you know, came here, the only thing I was drinking was liquor. You know what I mean? And when I got to that wine store, it was very informative. And you get to meet a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, you get to learn a lot of different things dealing with certain wines. And I guess I'm not gonna say I'm a connoisseur, but you know.
But you've had your eyes opened and you've learned.
Yes, I've done many things. I mean, like, here it's a lot of opportunities. You know what I mean? And like I say again, you know what? Same person that is from Ithaca probably couldn't do the same thing I'm doing now,
right?
Because they are Ithaca. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that comes from somewhere different has something different to offer.
Right. Right.
That's what I would think of it as.
Yeah, I think there's another thing that I would guess that's at play. When you are in the place where you grew up, you never quite shake the reputation and the economic class of the people you came from.
You got it.
And
that's me right now.
And when you move, there's an opportunity to find a different way to be.
Yeah.
And what's, you know, this is a Ithaca, in many respects, is extremely prejudiced around education.
Mm-hmm.
And yet your optimism and your, you know, working as an aide with a student and holding in what I heard three jobs there.
You got it.
That makes you, you're not competing in what's the kind of the cutthroat cultural environment around education. But I'm also wondering, and for many people, college is not an option. And for some people, it's not necessary.
Right.
And the issue, the question that comes to me is that something you've missed? Is it something don't feel like you
this
need?
This is something I would say. 4-year college is not for me.
Right.
I don't think it ever was. And I really don't think it is now. The only thing I think I would probably take up was something dealing with a trade, some type of trade.
A skill.
Yeah, some type of
very
skill.
Hands-on that skill.
Yeah, and I'm good with computers.
Yeah.
So that might be the next thing I go after. I just wanted to be ready. You know what I mean? A lot of things that went in my life, I didn't want to, you know, waste money I know I have, you know, saved up for college that I've had since I was probably 2 years old.
Right.
That my grandparents helped me out with.
Grandparents, yeah. Your...
But you know, I didn't want to be that type to say, "Oh, I got some money. Let me go to college and
blow it."
And blow it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I just felt that, you know, strong about it to where I said, "You know what? Anything I want, I'm going to do it for myself." And I probably do college for myself, but to have, you know, grandparents to help you out and to save money up for you for that long, and you know, you just want to appreciate it. You don't want to blow it over. You don't want to mess it up.
Right.
So I decided to just hold off on it. And when I'm ready, I know I'm going to be ready. And it's never too late. It's never too late.
Yeah, yeah.
You know
it's never
what I mean?
Too late to learn. And the form it takes depends on where you are at the time.
And at the time in St. Louis, that school was the last thing on my mind. I was worried about money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm doing all right in Ithaca. And it costs more.
It's more expensive.
It's
here
more
than,
expensive. It's a lot more expensive. I think Ithaca is like the eighth most expensive city.
It wasn't this. I mean, over 30 years, we've become a gated county, so that it has.
Yeah.
We have become a pocket of extreme expense.
You got it.
And a lot of people commuting.
Yeah.
Because
so
of that.
I took my lady down to St. Louis. She couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
She never been to Midwest, so it was very different for her. She loved it. You know what I mean? It was just so different that she loved it. And that's probably the same thing I'm thinking when I move to East Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. You know what I mean? Right. It's a different environment. So
right. And with that kind of response, you may actually have two homes in your heart.
Yeah, it's though St. Louis is always my home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I tell people all the time, but Ithaca is where I live now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But it also sounds like Ithaca may be worming its way into
your heart.
You got it. Heart.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to kind of cope with Ithaca because, you know what, my lady, she's from Ithaca. She's been living here all her life, so she knows.
She knows what's good.
Exactly. Me, I'm still locking my door. I got a high security alarm system.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that's what I know. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I work for that store, and I look outside, and I see people get out their cars with the door open.
And leave the door open.
Leave the door open, the car running.
Yeah.
Never seen that in my life.
Yeah. No, I know. It's a different.
Never in my life.
It's a different environment.
And I said, man.
It's a funny mix of elite affluence and down-home easiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a funny mix. I want to switch the gears just a little bit. You talked about how you prayed for 3 months every day prior to making the decision to move to Ithaca at the beginning of the show.
Talked to nuns.
And I just wanted to ask you, what do you do to, when you feel like you're getting a little off kilter, what do you do to restore yourself intellectually, emotionally, and physically? How do you take care of yourself? When do you know you need to?
Well, if it's based off of me, like when I moved here, like what do I know that is still here?
Yeah. What do you do daily?
Well, like right now, basically I had to remind myself, you know, because now that I'm here and I've been here, now what? You know what I mean? That's what you have to think about. Now what? I'm here now. This is something that I've prayed about for 3 months straight in a row. You know, went to church every day and sat at a pulpit and prayed to God because it was really on my mind, obviously. You know, I have to remind myself that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why I'm here is just as important. Because if someone had that on their mind that long, you can't say when I... Now we can say this for an example. If I got here and it didn't work out for me, go back home.
Yeah.
That's plain and simple. But I've been out here this long and nothing but good things has been happening to me. Why would you leave that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, nothing but good people, good surrounding people, you know, different environment,
right,
but good people.
Right. Do you pray every day?
I do not pray every day. I should.
No, I mean, this but is not I do. About should.
No, no, no.
But the thing about these questions is that what I ask people is we don't talk about this kind of stuff in public often, but we each have things that we do. Some of us work out, some of us cook, some of us garden, some of us pray, sing, whatever. Yeah. There are lots of things we do to take care of ourselves. I just wonder what you do.
Well, one thing that I know that I forget to remind myself is, you know, a lot of times we forget that when things are going good to pray. And that is when God really sees, you know, in my mind, that's when I feel that God really sees that you are thanking him. When things are going good, not just because you have a want or you have an answer, you need a question you need an answer to.
Right.
So I find myself sometimes just praying and saying, you know what, I forgot to do it this last week, but I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just take time out to do that because, you know, that right there is a stepping stone for me to want to do it more. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Every day, every night. No, I don't. Like I said, I want to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just a simple just think in your head. That's very easy to do. And sometimes I forget, you know, when everything's going good. A lot of times, you know, in reality, a lot of people do forget that when things are going good. Just thinking, period.
Right, right. And what does that do to you? How do you change when you remember to do that? What inside
well,
do you change?
Well, every time when I do that, you're saying as far as the praying
goes?
Yeah, when I pray, I just realize that this is where I need to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? This is where I need to be. This is what I've prayed on and I prayed on and I prayed on and I prayed on.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, it was going crazy in my head. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
To the point where I was just going crazy, just thinking about it constantly, whether I need to move here or not. And I finally moved here and all nothing good has been happening. It's like, okay, I'm here now. Yeah. This is where I need to be. And this is what, you know, in order to be somewhere you've never been, you got to do something you've never done.
Right. Right.
And that was something I've never did before.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm at now.
Yeah.
So that's what reminds me every day.
You have been more resilient than you thought you could be, or than you knew you could be,
right.
I guess.
There we go.
And one of the things that I want to say is when things are going well and people, prayer is a way of taking perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way, you would call it being grateful for what's going well, but really it's just looking at how things are and how they could be.
Yeah.
And when things are going well, people tend to want to just roll with them. But if you stop and you say, wow, it also allows you to see that things could change a direction and they could go well someplace else.
Got it.
Without being kind of just putting blinders on and just doing
until
you run over the edge.
And then now, God, please help me.
So what I'm trying to say is that it keeps you open to other things so that you can adjust and continue to do well.
I had an older friend named Paul, a very great guy. I'm talking about a good guy. And he taught me some things, and he explained to me about prayer, and he was stating that, you know, like, prayer is essentially meditation.
Mm-hmm.
When you're praying, you're meditating. You are basically, you know, like he gave me an example. He said, all right, he said, say you don't have a job, and you just pray to God, please, God, let me get this job. Please, 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 I just want this job, Lord, please. He said, and see if you get it. Without going out and filling the application.
Without going out and actually doing prayer
without works is nothing. It's pointless.
Right. And also prayer is, you know, I want a good job, and if this is the one, let it be, and if it's
there
not,
we go.
Let me let it go.
Right. That's what people don't understand. Sometimes you got to let go more than let it be, cuz you're going to run into that, you know.
And I think, you know, what's interesting is that you have said prayer and meditation are the same thing, and I think there's a tradition within Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the there's a tradition in of prayer that is true. a lot of people react that it's not true from come, but they, but for the most part, they don't know either their own Christian tradition or they're coming at it from a Buddhist point of view, right. And they're looking at a caricature right. of Christianity.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And one of the most wonderful things I had a chance to, a man from Memphis who was James Washington, and he wrote the first history of prayer in the African American church. Mm-hmm. And he had incredible quality of presence mm-hmm. and being open, and yeah. he was able to document a whole history of how people coped Got with it. Their prayers, yeah. and that's just sort of incredibly powerful.
Yeah,
Lloyd, it's been wonderful getting to
Thanks,
know you.
Man.
And you wanted to play as a closing song, "Computer Love." Zapp and Roger.
You got it.
Now, what do you want to say about that? We're gonna have time for a part of it, not all of it, but tell me why we're
all right.
This
so,
song.
Without this song, it symbolizes me, but we wouldn't even be talking right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this computer love, obviously, Facebook is what got me here,
right?
And we wouldn't even be having an interview right now. And I love this song.
Okay,
it represents a whole lot what's going on right now. Yeah. So yeah, that's why I selected that one.
Thank you very much.
No
Lloyd.
Problem.
Includes the Made of Clay report.